Chapter 26. Thursday next. I was only vaguely consulted when the first four of the Thursday next books were constructed. I was asked about my car, my house, and I even lent them a photo album, which I never got back. I was also introduced to the bland and faceless generic who would eventually become Thursday 1 through 4. The rest was created from newspaper reports and just plucked from the air. If I'd cared more about how it all was going to turn out, perhaps I would have given them more time. After another fruitless argument with the dispatcher at Transgenre Taxis, who told me they had two drivers off sick and it wasn't their fault, but they would see what could be done, I took the elevator down to the sixth floor of the Great Library and walked to the section of shelving that carried all five of the Thursday books, from the Air Affair all the way through to the Great Samuel Pepys Fiasco. There was every edition, too, from publisher's proof to hardback, large print and mass market paperback. I picked up a copy of The Air Affair and looked carefully for a way in. I knew that the book was first-person narrative, and having a second me clearly visible to readers would be wildly confusing, if the book wasn't confusing enough already. I soon found what I was looking for, a time lapse of 6 weeks after Landon's death, near the beginning of the book. I scanned the page for the correct place, and using an oblique, non-appearing entry method taught to me by Miss Havisham, I slipped unseen into the end of Chapter 1. I arrived in the written Swindon just as the sun was dipping below the horizon, and I was standing opposite our house in the old town. Or at least, it was the remains of our house. The fire had just been put out, and the building was now a blackened ruin, the still hot timbers steaming as they were doused with water. Through the twinkling of blue and red emergency lights, I could see a small figure sitting in the back of an ambulance, a blanket draped across her shoulders. The legal necessity of removing Landon from the series was actually a blessing in disguise for the publishers. It freed up their Thursday romantically, and also gave a reason for her psychotic personality. Boy, was this book ever crap. I waited in the crowd for a moment until I could sense that the chapter was over, then approached Thursday 1 through 4, who had her back to me and was talking to a badly realized version of Bowden, who in this book was known by the legally unactionable Crowden Babel. "Good evening," I said, and Thursday jumped as though stuck with a cattle prod. "What are you doing here?" she said, without turning round. "Text Grand Central saw a few wrinkles in the narrative, and you're too unpleasant for anyone other than me to come and have a look." "It's okay," she said. "Everything's fine. It's probably a story code engine on the fritz, a build-up of irony on the dialogue injectors or something." She seemed jittery, but still didn't want to turn and look at me straight on. "You sure?" "Of course I'm sure. Do you think I don't know my own book? I'm afraid I must go. I've got to run through some lines with the replacement Hades." "Wait," I said, and grabbed her arm. I pulled her around to face someone else entirely. It wasn't Thursday 1 through 4. It was a woman with the same colouring and build, clothes and general appearance. But it wasn't her. "Who the hell are you?" I demanded. She sighed heavily and shrugged. I'm a character understudy." "I can see that. Do you have a name?"
"Alice PON 24330, she replied resignedly.
"This series isn't up for maintenance for years. What are you doing here?" She bit her lip, looked away, and shifted her weight uneasily. "If she finds out I've talked, well, she has a temper."
"And I don't?"
She said nothing. I turned to Crowden Babel. "Where is she?" He rubbed his face, but said nothing. It seemed I was the only person not frightened by Thursday 1 through 4.
"Listen," I said to Babel, pointing at Alice PON 24330.
"She's just an understudy, and is like a phone number, replaceable. You're in every book and have a lot more to lose. Now, either you talk to me right this minute and it goes no further, or we turn you over to jurisfiction and 30 tons of prime quality shit is going to descend on you from a very great height. Babel scratched the back of his head. She does this every now and then. She thinks the series is too small for her. Babel and the ersatz Thursday glanced nervously at each other. There was something else going on. This wasn't just a simple substitution, so Thursday 1 through 4 could have a break. Somebody better start talking, or you'll discover where she gets her temper from. Now where has she gone? Babel looked nervously around. She came back furious, said you'd fired her on false pretenses, and she wanted to get some serious payback. What sort of payback? I don't know. If you're lying to me, I swear, on the life of the great Panjen... I know where she is, said the ersatz Thursday in a quiet voice. What the hell? When she discovers I've talked to you, I'll be dead anyway. She's out. In the real world. This was serious. Substitution and illegal page running were one thing, but crossing over to the real world was quite another. I could legally erase her on sight, and the way I felt right now, I... My thoughts were interrupted because both Crowden and the understudy had looked anxiously toward the burned-out shell of the house. I suddenly had a very nasty thought, and my insides changed to lead. I could barely say the word, but I did. Landon? Yes, said the understudy in a soft voice. She wanted to know what it was to love. I felt anger well up inside me. I pulled out my travel book and read as I walked toward the house. As I did so, the evening light brightened, the emergency vehicles faded back into fiction, and the house, which burned to a husk in the air affair, was suddenly perfect again as I moved back into the real world. My mouth felt dry after the jump, and I could feel a headache coming on. I broke into a panicky sweat and dumped my jacket and bag in the front garden, but kept my pistol and slipped a spare eraser head into my back pocket. I very quietly stepped up to the front door and silently slipped the key into the lock. The house was silent, aside from the thumping of my heart, which in my heightened state of anxiety was almost deafening. I had planned to lie in wait for her, but a glance down at the hall table made me reappraise the situation. My house keys and distinctive gramicite keyring were already lying there where I left them. But I still had mine in my hand. I felt powerfully thirsty too, and was badly dehydrated, the most annoying side effect of my return to the Outland. I looked through to the kitchen and could see a pitcher of half-finished juice on the kitchen drainer. If I didn't drink something soon, I'd pass out. On the other hand, Thursday 1 through 4 was somewhere in the house waiting for Landon or rummaging in our sock drawer or something. I silently crept along the downstairs hallway, checked the front room, then went through to the dining room beyond, and from there to the kitchen. The only thing I noticed out of place was a book of family holiday snapshots open on the coffee table. I moved into the kitchen and was about to take a swig of juice straight from the pitcher when I heard a noise that turned my blood to ice. I dropped the pitcher, which shattered on the kitchen floor with a concussion that echoed around the house. Pickwick woke up in her basket and started plucking at everything in sight until she saw who it was and went back to sleep. I heard voices upstairs and the sound of footsteps padding across the bedroom floor. I held my pistol at arm's length and walked slowly down the hall to the stairs. The sound that made me drop the pitcher was Landon. But it was the sort of sound that only I ever heard him make. Something that was for me and me alone. I rounded the newel post and looked up. All almost immediately, Thursday 1 through 4 stepped onto the landing, completely naked, and holding her automatic. Fictional she might have been, but out here she was as deadly as any real person. We stared at each other for a moment, and she fired. I felt her shot whine past me and embed itself in the doorframe. At almost exactly the same time, I fired my pistol. There was a low thud, and the air wobbled as though momentarily seen through a milk bottle. She jumped back into the bedroom as the wide spread of the eraser head hit harmlessly on the walls and stairs. The charge only affected anything textual. She'd know my weapon was a single shot. So I turned on my heels and ran back through the front room, breaking the pistol open to reload. The cartridge ejected with a soft thwop, and I yanked the spare out of my back pocket and pushed it into the breech. There was a detonation and another whine of a near miss as I jumped across the breakfast table and snapped the pistol shut with a flick of my wrist. I pulled the heavy oak kitchen table to shield me, and three shots smashed into the wood. I heard the sound of footsteps running away and rose to fire at her retreating form. The dull thud of the eraser head echoed around the room, and there was a mild hiss as it struck its mark. I heard the front door open. I got up, slightly too quickly, and the room went squiffy. I staggered to the sink and drank from the running tap, and then, still feeling light-headed but tolerably alert, stumbled up the hall to the open front door. There was a small scattering of fine text on the doorstep, and more leading out into the front garden, where I saw her automatic lying on the garden path. I turned and yelled upstairs, "Stay where you are, Land!" and then followed the trail of text to the front gate, where there was a random sprinkling of letters. I cursed. There wasn't enough here to be fatal. I'd probably just clipped her and caused a small part of her to unravel. It was no big deal. She could have another body part written exclusively for her down in the well. My shoulder bag was still where I'd left it in the front garden, and I rummaged inside for a spare eraser head. I slipped the shiny cartridge into the barrel, then stopped. Something was wrong. I searched the bag more frantically, then all around the area nearby, but found only a light smattering of text. The wounded Thursday 1 through 4 had been here and taken my travel book. I looked around, closed the pistol, and followed the small trail of letters to the garden gate, where they ended abruptly. I gazed out into the empty street. Nothing. She had jumped out, back to where she belonged, and with my travel book. My travel book! I wiped the sweat from my brow and muttered, "Shit, shit, shit, shit!" I turned and ran back to the house, but then stopped as I suddenly had a series of terrible thoughts. Thursday 1 through 4's adventures ranged across several years, so she wasn't particularly age-specific. Landon couldn't know that it was not me but my fictional counterpart he'd just made love to. I didn't bear him any malice. I mean, it wasn't as if he'd slept with another woman or anything. But because he knew nothing about jurisfiction, and it was better for our relationship that he never knew, there was only one course of action I could take. "Hang on, Land!" I yelled upstairs. "I'm okay. Just stay where you are." "Why?" he yelled back. "Just do as I ask, sweetheart." I grabbed the dustpan and brush and hurriedly swept up the text that littered the front step and the path. And when I heard the distant wail of the police sirens, I went back indoors, took off all my clothes, stashed them behind the sofa, and ran upstairs. "What's going on?" asked Land, who had just gotten his leg and trousers on. I wrapped myself in a robe, but couldn't look at him, and just sat at the dressing table, clenching and unclenching my fists to try to control the violent thoughts. Then I realized, after what she'd done, I could think about wringing her badly written neck as much as I wanted. I was a wronged woman. Dangerously violent thoughts were allowed. I'd get her for this. but I was in no hurry. She had nowhere to go. I knew exactly where I could find her. "Nothing's going on," I said in a quiet voice. "Everything's fine."